Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back to this Tuesdays Across the Movie Aisle. I'm your host, Sonny Bunch. I'm joined, as always, by Alyssa Rosenberg and Peter Suderman. Alyssa, Peter, how are you today?
I am in a frenzy of snow day domesticity.
I am just really happy to be talking about movies with friends.
Many thanks, as always, to the folks who are listening on Tuesday, as you are helping to keep this thing sustainable. We had a special treat for you guys last week. We had a bonus episode with special guest Franklin Leonard of The Blacklist. I think we figured out that the best way to do this is for one of us to stay home, because you get four people in a room, it starts getting real crowded. You want to have just three people there. So I took the bonus week off this week, and Alyssa and Peter did a fine job. I enjoyed listening to that as I was editing it. It was a fun episode. But you know, that's only for the paying members for now. We might open it up to everybody later. I haven't decided. I can't say for sure one way or the other. It could happen. It could not. I don't know. But we'll see. And now we're gonna move on. We're gonna move on.org to an Oscar edition of controversies and nontroversies. A game I like to call should/will. Should slash Will Summer or Will you know, whoever, it doesn't matter. I'm just kidding, Will. The nominations dropped this week.
This has gotten very dark, Sonny.
there were some surprises in nominations. I don't think anyone expected Sinners to wind up with the most Oscar nominations of all time. But everything shook out more or less as expected, I think. Lots of nominations for Sinners, lots of nominations for One Battle After Another. Netflix's Frankenstein wound up being their big title of the year. Sentimental Value, which is the beloved movie about movies this year around, sorry, J. Kelly, racked up a bunch of nominations too. We're going to look at the biggest categories, the four acting categories, plus director and picture, sorry, writers, and saying who, we're just going to say who we think should win and who we think will win. We got a lot to get through here. There's a lot of categories here, and I'm sure we're going to discuss them all, so let's get going here. Best Supporting Actor. Peter, who do you have, who should win Best Supporting Actor?
Should win is very easy. Delroy Lindo. Come on, Delroy Lindo. We all love Delroy Lindo. He deserves it. He's great. He's amazing in Sinners. He has one of the great voices in Hollywood right now. He's getting on in the years. There's not going to be a lot of chances to give him an Oscar again. They should give it to Delroy Lindo.
All right. So that's who you think should win. Who do you think will win, Peter?
Unfortunately, I'm nearly certain that it's going to go to Benicio del Toro. Del Toro is the memeable, lovable, like sort of a center of One Battle After Another. It is a great performance. I really like it. We've talked about some of the issues I have with that movie on this podcast before, but I just think that he has become such a kind of, it's a very good performance in a movie that I think is going to do very well. And it's also a movie that positions him in particular as a kind of a resistance symbol in a really charming way that is going to draw a lot of votes.
It's interesting. All right, Alyssa, who do you think should win?
This is gonna hand off, because I actually do think that Benicio del Toro should win Best Supporting Actor here. I love Delroy Lindo. He should have won an Academy Award for Best Actor for Defy Bloods, in which he is unbelievably incredible in a, you know, sort of a role that is particularly difficult to like. But I actually think that Benicio del Toro should win this Academy Award, in part because his role functions not only as a sort of memeable and friendly and charming center of that movie, but as a counter critique to all of the, you know, violent revolutionary bullshit that the French 75 are parroting all the time, right? Like, he is someone who is working quietly and consistently in plain sight, not getting caught up in code words and drama and making a meaningful difference in people's lives. And actually, that is the crucial political message that people should take away from One Battle After Another, that it is about providing material support to people who need it every day when it counts, that ultimately provides the seeds of change.
Okay, well, who do you think will win then, if you think he should win?
Stellan Skarsgård, who is making sort of a late showing. People like, I mean, I loved Sentimental Value. I talked Peter into watching it. But I think he is going to be the sort of late breaking contender there in part. And the reason is that, and that will be the big win for Sentimental Value. Because I think the reason that that became the movie about movies that everybody loved is that, unlike Jay Kelly, which argues that making movies is less important than raising your family, Sentimental Value argues that you can make movies with your family and it'll heal all your family trauma.
I'm going to end up splitting the difference here between both of you guys in that I think Delroy Lindo should win. Obviously, everybody loves Delroy Lindo. He should have won, as Alyssa said, for Defy Bloods a few years back. I have loved him, like, just speaking on a personal level, I have loved him since the movie Congo. There's Congo. He has the great line about sesame cake in Congo. Just a wonderful performance there. But he's so good in this, and he is the kind of weird beating heart of that movie. I love him. I also think that Stellan Skarsgård will win. I think that is kind of how things are breaking right now. I don't think that will necessarily be the only win for Sentimental Value, but I do think he's the sort of guy, he is like Delroy Lindo, a guy who's been around for a long time. People love him. They want to give him an award. Like, he's earned this tribute. And I think he will probably take the win. I think Del Toro and Penn end up splitting it with one battle after another, because frankly, Sean Penn gives the more interesting performance in that movie of the two of them. And it's more showy. It's more actory. It's like, hey, I'm walking around like I got a stick up my ass the whole time. Look at me. I'm Sean Penn. But anyway, I don't know. We'll see. All right. Best actress in a supporting role. Peter, who do you think should win best actress in a supporting role?
I got to pull this up here. Oh, here we go. So who do I think should win this? I'm going to go with, I'm going to pronounce this, Renate Rensvi from Sentimental Value. I love that performance. I love, Alyssa, you're looking at me like,
is she no, that's,
sorry,
as a...
actress. Oh, sorry, that's sorry. Actress. Yeah. You're looking at best
Guys,
actress.
I'm sorry. I don't have the order that you're going in, so I'm having to pull it up each time.
I have this okay. on nope, since I don't know. Paper.
All right. Just it's okay. You didn't have to do any prep right. for this. That's fine. That's just go ahead.
Supporting actress. Do you want me to
supporting
go?
Supporting actress.
I have mine up. Sorry. I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
Should I go? All right. I think that Amy Madigan should win Best Supporting Actress for Weapons. That is a movie that absolutely does not work without that completely bonkers, like, she's the scariest clown ever to appear on screen, in my humble opinion, right? I mean, she shows up as this sort of overly made up, freaked out weirdo, and then only gets scarier when she takes off her wig and garish makeup. She is the perfect villain for a story about how people don't want to do the sort of right, assertive thing on behalf of kids when it might risk offending someone. She's unbelievably terrifying. I absolutely think she should win. I think Tiana Taylor will win for Best Supporting Actress, and I won't be particularly mad about it. I think that she is just unbelievably magnetic on screen, even if I don't think, I have not seen her in the movie where she plays a foster mom someone who steals her kid from the foster system. Really want to watch her in that, in part because I think that probably is a movie more worthy of her talents than either One Battle After Another or The Rip, which we will discuss later. But I think she is pretty clearly a momentum candidate there.
Okay. Peter, do you have supporting actress?
I do. So okay, I actually think that the should and will are the same here. I think that Tiana Taylor for One Battle After Another both should win and will win. It's a great performance. Again, I have issues with this movie. We don't need to tote, I'm not going to rehash them. I think One Battle After Another has a lot of momentum behind it. Just, look at the Critics Awards through the end of the year there. It sort of feels right for the political moment. And that is a big, showy performance that is also not just a big, showy performance. That is, it's a pretty remarkable piece of acting. And it, when she is on screen, that movie is electric.
I really like Teyana Taylor in One Battle After Another. And I agree. Look, I watched it again this weekend with my wife. It was her first time watching it. That first 40 minutes is the best 40 minutes in the film. And she leaves and things kind of things lose momentum. He's cutting away too often from the center of the action, whatever. But she's very good. But I don't have her as should win or will win. For me, should win is Amy Madigan, just a wonderful performance as Aunt Gladys in Weapons. This is Weapons. She probably won't win because this is Weapons' only nomination. It's very rare that a movie that only gets one nomination wins in a category like this. So that's probably not going to happen. But it's too bad because she is really good in this movie. And I hope she gets the recognition, but maybe the nomination is enough. Who can say? Will win. I think it's going to be. I think Sentimental Value is going to take another one here for Inga Ibsdotter Ilias. She is the sister in that movie. And there is, of course, there's a vote splitting possibility, but I really don't think anybody's voting for Elle Fanning in this. I don't think anyone who watched Sentimental Value is like, yes, Elle Fanning is the one we're going with here. This is a movie that succeeds entirely based on the performances, which is why I think that both Skarsgård and Ilias have the kind of inside track here. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I often am. Best actor should win. Peter, who should win best actor?
So I think should is Michael B. Jordan in Sinners. It's just a commanding performance, right? It's technically complicated because it's a dual role, and both characters stand like it's a really fascinating sort of technical performance, just in the sense that he is playing two characters who are on the one hand quite clearly differentiated, and on the other hand, quite clearly related, right? They sort of like, we've all met sisters or brothers who family members who are like, oh, once you see that they're right, you just sort of like, they have something similar that connects them, something that's a little bit, you can kind of describe it, but it's hard to pin down. And Michael B. Jordan pins that down in his portrayal here. And I think he and I think he probably will win as well, though I do think it could be Timothy Chalamet. Chalamet's performance is incredibly ambitious. A difficult role in the sense that he is playing a fundamentally unlikable character and keeping your attention, keeping you from walking out for the most part. And it might be that the Academy wants to kind of anoint him as a big young star and deliver that, and, you know, sort of deliver the kind of, here you are, you've made it, right? Like Chalamet clearly wants that and is campaigning that way. So I do think he's the closest thing there is to competition. But again, my should and will are the same here. And it's Michael B. Jordan for both.
Alyssa, who should win for best actor?
I agree that it's Michael B. Jordan. And I want to emphasize, I agree with everything that Peter said, but I think part of what's interesting is that he is playing these characters who are related, but they're differentiated, not just in that they're different people, but they're people who are on two very different emotional journeys, right? I mean, one of them is grieving, and one of them is, you know, sort of rakish and roguish. They have fundamentally different temperaments, in a way that Jordan just brings to life really beautifully. I think Will Win is, if not Michael B. Jordan, I agree it's going to be Timothy Chalamet, which is, it's like, these are two sets of performances that are both enormous quantities of acting, but in Chalamet's case, it's all concentrated into a single character, whereas with Jordan, it's split between two of them, and it's hard, like, if you're going just by quantity of acting, it's actually a very difficult measuring job. I do think, Chalamet is really, like, that movie does not work. You cannot sub Jacob Elordi into that role, right? I mean, it is, right? Or, like, you cannot substitute Paul Mescal as Marty Supreme. And so it's a great illustration of just the sort of indelibility, the irreplaceability of a performance in a movie. But there's a lot of effort in it. And there's an effortlessness in Michael B. Jordan's dual performances that is even more impressive for the technical difficulty.
I just imagined Paul Mescal playing Marty Mauser in Marty Supreme and got like angry about it. I was like, because he would just do the same thing. He'd be, have like the big dopey eyes and be like, oh, I want to play ping pong. Oh, I hate that guy.
I'd order popcorn just to throw it at the screen if that happened.
Best actor should win. Michael B. Jordan in Sinners. I agree with all you guys. He is great in a dual role. Not an easy thing to do to differentiate those two performances. And he's just having an enormous amount of fun on the screen. Like that is, I always like it when actors look like they're having a good time, and he looks like he's having a good time pretty much throughout that film. But I do think Timothée Chalamet does win. You know, this is his third nomination. I do get the sense that Hollywood really wants to anoint him as the next big thing. Like this is his shot. And I think Marty Supreme has a sneaky amount of momentum behind it. It will be over $100 million domestic by the time the Oscars roll around, probably, depending on, you know, kind of how it holds here over the last couple weeks with the Oscar nominations coming out. And he's a great campaigner is the other, like this is, you know, all of these conversations are, you know, kind of foregrounded by like, these guys are out there shaking hands with all the voters and going to screenings and having, and he's very good at that element of it. He's a real pro at that sort of thing. So I think he's got a pretty good shot here. But you never know. I don't know. All right. Best actress is like the easiest category for will win. There have been few bigger locks this award season. But who do we think should win? Peter, who should win best actress?
Should win is Renate Renzvi in Sentimental Value. It's just a wonderful, humane performance from an actress who we haven't seen a ton of before. I did go back and watch The Worst Person in the World after seeing Sentimental Value, and I might even like it better than Sentimental Value. Might think it's an even better movie, but this is not somebody who people are super familiar with, and yet, right? And that in and of itself is a challenge for a performer. Is if you are new to the screen, you have not established a character, a persona, an expectation amongst viewers for you yet. And yes, people did like The Worst Person in the World. She's not a total unknown here, but The Worst Person in the World was not a giant hit by any means. It's become a kind of a cult thing, you know, sort of amongst a certain type of person, kind of on the internet. And so this is her, this is in many ways her introduction for a lot of people. And seeing just the kind of total command of natural emotional range that she has here is, it's really something. And it's one of my favorite performances of the year for sure.
All right, Alyssa, well, who do you think will win? I mean, there's only one answer.
It's going to be Rose Byrne. It's going to be Rose Byrne. There's no, she's won all of the critics awards, right? I mean, Sonny, you're looking at me and you're like, it's
okay. I'm curious. Okay. That's an interesting choice. Alyssa, who do you think should win best actress?
I agree that it's Renate Renzvi. And I also, again, I feel like Peter, I unfortunately have to follow up Peter, except when he screws up his notes all evening, because we apparently agree on everything. But I would add I think a challenge for her is that these are not English speaking performances, right? And like, there are people who are just lazy and don't like subtitles and won't watch them. But for anyone who is on the fence about watching this movie, her opening sequence in this movie, where she has a panic attack before going on stage and goes through this like incredibly hilarious range of sort of misadventures in an effort to like get herself right. And before she does this like very intense sort of avant-garde piece of theater, is one of the funniest things I saw at the movie this year. And it's an incredibly enjoyable bit of physical comedy and, you know, sort of nervous energy. She's just great. Is awesome.
It also establishes the whole rest of the movie, because she goes totally batshit crazy, basically has to kind of ruin herself for you know, 3 minutes, kind of not just have a panic attack, but basically be unwilling to go on with the show, but in a way to unwilling to go on with life, right, is sort of the metaphor here. And that becomes, right, and then she just walks out and does it and creates beautiful art out of it. But she has to go through that before she can create the art.
Yeah, there's an incredibly funny moment in it where she asked her director, who, as it turns out, she's also having an affair with, to slap her in the face. And he's like, I can't can't do that. She's like, I give you permission. It's like they have to have this like little HR negotiation about whether he can do the thing she wants. I actually think Jesse Buckley is going to win. I think people like Rose Byrne a lot, but I think that people are going to be just like turned off. I have not watched that movie because of how hard it sounds. And I like Rose Byrne a lot. But I think people are just going to be, have not tried it or been off put. And I think people are going to want to give something to Hamnet. Could be wrong, but that's my working theory.
I can see it, but Rose Byrne gives a performance that is the movie. There isn't anything in If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, except for her performance. I mean, I'm only, yes, there are some other actors, but the movie is basically just a series of extended kind of panicky close-ups of her face.
Should Win is, you guys both got it wrong, actually. Should Win is Emma Stone in Begonia. Emma Stone in Begonia, who delivers just this amazing performance as like the girl boss CEO who's actually an alien secretly. Just a wonderful kind of almost tripartite performance where she goes from like girl boss CEO to like kind of panicked kidnapped person to like ice queen at the end. It just like the whole thing is wonderful. And she's very good in it. The answer for Will Win is definitely Jesse Buckley and Hamnet. I was interested to see your choice there, Peter. I'll just say that the odds are very heavily in Jesse Buckley's favor. She's currently at 89 cents on Kalshi, for instance. Mm-hmm. One you have to I don't know. I don't know how that works exactly.
Wait, have we checked the odds on Mogul? I mean, on Movie
on Mogul on you know, no, I have not looked at no. She's very
should
much the
right
the heavy favorite. I think Gold Derby has her at like 90%. It's that's probably what's going to happen.
All right, so, all right, you're probably right.
That's just that's what's in the cards, I think. All right, best director. I'll let Alyssa go first this time. Alyssa, best director, who should win?
I genuinely can't decide if it should be Ryan Coogler or Josh Safdie. I loved both of those movies. I think they're both just incredible accomplishments in their own ways. And I couldn't be mad if either of them won. That said, I think it's going to be Paul Thomas Anderson. I think that is, you know, the one battle after another. Momentum seems pretty hard to stop. It's a lot of movie. And I think that the political timing is going to make it pretty overwhelming that's what the outcome will be for both best director and best director.
Peter, what do you have for Should Win? Who should win best director?
I kind of agree with Alyssa that it's Coogler and Safdie sort of in on the should, but I also, there's a part of me, I'm going to say this maybe just to pick an argument with Alyssa here or to differentiate myself. There's a part of me that thinks that, Yachim, is that how you pronounce it? Trier? Then anyway, Trier for sentimental
Yachim
value.
Trier.
That movie, Yachim. That Yachim. All right, Trier should win, and it's not quite as formally and aggressively showy a bit of directing, but it is a really quite complex movie, just in terms of the way that the shots are structured, the kind of the pattern of all of it, right? Like how it all fits together. And it's one that, and this is why I like it, and like it for a best director, win, is that it's incredibly complex. And if you're paying attention, you're just constantly sort of have not quite your breath taken away, but just sort of like, this is all one long take, right? Like we build to this whole long thing at the very end. And there's all this, there's those bits with the house showing that, where we get to see the house through the ages, right? Again, this is stuff that you wouldn't, even with this script, you wouldn't necessarily think to do visually. You wouldn't necessarily think to tell this story exactly this way. And it's so clever, but it's also quite subtle. It just doesn't sort of jump out at you in the way that Safdie's direction of Supreme does. So I'm gonna pick Trier as my should, even though I think, Sinners and Marty Supreme both, I could make the case for either of them, but I'm gonna pick Trier because it's a movie I've been thinking about a lot.
Who do you think will win?
It's Paul Thomas Anderson. It might be Coogler, but it's Paul Thomas Anderson.
All right.
I mean, look, I think the Oscars are a two-movie race. This is Sinners versus one battle after another. And I'm not saying that no other movies will win in any categories, but those are the two films that are going to dominate here. And there's ways in which this could go where Sinners, with all of these nominations, could maybe end up not getting very many wins, but it also might just end up kind of unexpectedly sweeping and leaving one battle after another in the dust. On the other hand, I just think for both political and artistic reasons, One Battle After Another seems like the movie that is set to win the big awards, especially director and et cetera.
Yeah. For me, the should win is Ryan Coogler, who just, there are like three or four sequences in Sinners that are amongst the best things I've seen on screen in a very long time. Just incredibly well put together. The kind of the time traveling Songs of the Ancestors sequence, just an amazing bit of filmmaking there. And then the Rocky Road to Dublin bit in when they're with the vampires who have turned the revelers. It's just a amazing couple of sequences there. I do think Paul Thomas Anderson does win. This is really his Scent of a Woman award. Like, oh, we finally after all these years, we got to give Paul Thomas Anderson a trophy. So it might as well be for One Battle After Another. It's fine if it's mid-tier Paul Thomas Anderson. That's still better than most movies out there. So, all right, best picture. Last one we're going to do here. Best picture should win. Peter.
Should win is... Now my brain is just completely blanking. I'm just like lost what movies are... Oh man,
Alyssa, yeah. Who should win Best Picture?
Why can't I?
Sinners
think?
Should win I'm Best so Picture. Sorry, guys. It is top to bottom. I mean, one thing we haven't really talked about with Sinners, and we've talked about Sinners a lot on this podcast, is sort of how good the performances Coogler gets out of his actors, sort of top to bottom, right? I mean, there are, you know, the set pieces, which I totally agree with, but like the, you know, the sex scene with Michael B. Jordan and Winnie Misoke is such an interesting scene because it is not physically, you know, overly revealing. The actors have their clothes on. It's not really meant to be titillating. It's about sex as an expression of grief, which is an emotion that you just so rarely see on screen, right? I mean, you know, we haven't talked at all about the slam poet Saul Williams, who plays the preacher father, who has been sort of in and out of movies. I actually know him mostly from his poetry. But like that's just a sort of sharp little selection. There is care in every frame of this movie. There's not a bad performance in it. There is not sort of a detail that doesn't feel like it contributes to the movie in some ways. It is heartbreaking even before the vampires show up when you understand that this dream is built on a faulty economic assumption about you know, the idea that Black people in the Delta have money to spend instead of just plantation scrip, which in its own way, you know, makes it a fascinating story about arguments about sort of diversity in underserved markets in Hollywood for the last decade. It is a really enjoyable movie that is going to deepen with age. I think it's obviously the best picture of the year. One Battle After Another will win. And I won't even be able to be super mad about it. But it'll win. Sinner should win.
Peter, who do you think?
I'm tempted to make an argument for F1 just because, but no, F1 shouldn't be Best Picture. It's a great movie.
Why?
Why? Because I wanted you to do that. No, what should win is Begonia. What should win is Begonia because it's the best David Fincher movie. I don't know. Weapons is also the best David Fincher movie that didn't.
No,
it's not directed
you.
By David Fincher.
I hate you. I quit.
Wow. Wow, Alyssa. I didn't realize we had this much to. Seriously, Begonia. I love Begonia. It is of the movies that are nominated. It is the one that thrilled me the most. That made me just sort of sit forward in my chair and go, I can't. But like, yes. Over and over and over. And it's a great movie about how people can't talk to each other, I guess, including me and Alyssa.
What do you think will win?
That's going to be one battle after another. This is not, it might be Sinners. Again, I can see Sinners winning, but it's going to be one battle after another.
All right. Should win is Sinners. That's the best movie of this list of films that was nominated. Eddington is the best movie of the year, but Sinners of the ones nominated, best movie. And will win is probably one battle after another, though I can craft an argument that Sinners ends up coming out on top here. Probably not as long as ICE is like killing people in the streets. I feel like that is just going to, this is going to make the really, really doing a lot of favors for Warner Brothers, the murders in the streets. That's a, it's a big win.
The Christmas Adventures Club running America.
Yeah. All right. That's it for predictions. It's a great segment. I love doing this every year. All right. Make sure to swing by movieisle.substack.com for our bonus episode about winter movies. You're stuck in the house. What are you gonna do to kill the time? You gotta kill the time. You gotta entertain the children. You gotta keep from going insane. Keep from getting stir crazy. So what do we watch to do that? That's what we're discussing on the episode this week as we are snowed into our various homes. It's gonna be fun. All right, now on to the main event, The Rip.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The Rip, starring Matt Damon and Ben Affleck and directed by Joe Carnahan. The Rip is the sort of mid-budget crime thriller programmer that studios used to make like 4 or 5 a year of just to fill spots on the release calendar. Netflix's version of the same costs, for some reason, like 3 times as much money to make. We'll get to that in a minute. I mentioned the business element here because it is like kind of important here. The movie itself is fine. It's fine. Damon and Affleck are cops. I'm not even going to bother with character names in this description. I'm just going to use actor names because that's all anybody cares about. Because you're watching this because it's a Matt Damon and Ben Affleck movie, right? They're cops. Their boss has been killed before the film starts. Internal Affairs is trying to figure out if someone on the team was in on the hit. While Affleck and Damon and their teammates, including Steve Yeun and Teyana Taylor, amongst others, are trying to get to the bottom of the case. The team is tipped off to a stash house where there may or may not be some amount of money hidden in the walls. Matt Damon is suspiciously giving everybody different amounts of monies on the tip. And when they tear into the walls, they find tens of millions of dollars. So much money in there. To make sure none of it is stolen, they have to count the money there before transporting it away where it will be counted again, which means that they are going to be sitting ducks for anyone. Crooked cops, drug cartels, et cetera, who decide to make a run at the stash. I will say several good things about this movie before I explain why it is representative of everything that is wrong in the world of filmmaking. Affleck and Damon have star power, and that makes all of their scenes totally watchable, like pretty compelling even. Affleck and Scott Adkins co-stars. He is the renowned martial artist / VOD action star. He and Affleck have great chemistry together. They're kind of playfully antagonistic brothers in this movie. Get those two guys a buddy action comedy directed by Chad Stahelski. That's what I demand. That's what Sonny's big takeaway from this movie is. We need the Affleck-Adkins team-up series. It also looks like a real movie, which is not always the case with made-for-Netflix pictures, right? Carnahan understands lighting and composition, and the movie manages to be dark and be shot in dark places at night, but not be totally invisible, which is weirdly hard for some modern directors. The whole thing goes down pretty smoothly. But like I said, it's a Netflix movie, which means several things. One is that everything is kind of hinted at about 3 times before a character simply says out loud all of the things that are happening with about 20 minutes left. It also cost around nine figures. I've seen numbers between $100 and $120 million on this budget. And like, whatever, that doesn't say anything about the quality of the thing. Sure, whatever. Okay, fine. But Affleck and Damon don't come cheap, right? They are getting paid. They're probably getting paid $20 million a piece. Their company, Artis Equity, makes a big deal about paying all the below-the-line workers bonuses and residuals and the such. So they get a lot of money out of Netflix, and that all filters down. Good for them. But you have to understand what's happening here. Affleck and Damon are getting a ton of money because people think of them as movie stars. They think of them as movie stars who they go to see in theaters. And as a result, when they're scrolling on the endless scroll of Netflix, all the tiles, they see Matt and Ben. They're like, oh, I know them. I'll watch their movie. They are movie stars because, again, they are known for starring in movies that are released in theaters and bringing this sort of thing to Netflix and only to Netflix, training audiences to expect to watch this sort of movie at home instead of heading out to the theaters is going to wind up killing theaters and getting rid of that whole star creation. What is Netflix going to do when there are no more movie stars? I don't know.
Tilly Norwood.
Good question. Really interesting question. There will be no more movie stars because the movie theaters that made them will be dead. So anyway, just something to think about here. Anyway, again, neither here nor there. The Rip is fine. It's a great movie to watch while you're folding socks or you're in the midst of like five drinks and you're like, I want to put on some on Netflix. What's on Netflix? Oh yeah, The Rip. Let's watch The Rip. Oh, I can follow everything that's going on here. This is great. You can be a little bit drunk. You can still follow it along while you're answering your emails and you're checking your Insta. That's the future, Peter. So it's good, right? This is what we have. So it must be a good thing.
Yeah, maybe it was a mistake to release this movie during dry January. It should have been a cocktail accompaniment, right? Recommended beers. This seems like a craft beer guy movie in a lot of ways. It's okay. It's not great. It's not terrible. I didn't hate that I watched it. This is the sort of thing, like you said, that they used to make pretty frequently. And when studios would release five of these a year, I would go see all of them. I mean, it's sort of pretty good, but maybe like almost pretty good, right? It's like it's not mediocre. It's like a half a tick below pretty good. It's almost pretty good. And, you know, it's under 2 hours. It's got some, some guy actors you like, right? Who you like in it. And they look great in their 50s, you know, it's all right. You know, trim down Ben Affleck. Good for you. You're in shape. But it's totally forgettable. There's just not enough to it. It's actually kind of weird that in some of the interviews, Matt Damon has said things like, well, you know, we had to reverse the way you usually structure an action movie for theaters, where typically you have this sort of escalation of set pieces that runs throughout. And right in each act, you've got a couple of them. And at the end of the act, you have your big set pieces. But in Netflix, what they want you to do is put your big thing at the very beginning so that people stay through the first 5 minutes and are lured in. Okay, so in the first 5 minutes, yes, there is this sort of big murder sequence where the police captain gets killed. But then there is not a lot of action in this movie there's maybe two little action scenes right after that. One of which basically at the end of the second act, as they're sort of coming out of the house, and then another one after they've left the house. And that's kind of it. Now, otherwise, it's just sort of, you know, it's almost a whodunit, a kind of a mystery, right, where they're just pointing fingers at each other. And it's OK. It's fine. But what struck me about this movie is, Sonny, you complained about this being the model. About the way that this model works. I think this movie is itself a complaint about the business model. I think this movie is not all that subtly a critique of the streaming era. It is a movie about guys who hate their jobs. They're getting old and the job is falling out from under them. It's becoming bureaucratized, right? The leadership is no longer there, right? The captain is kind of checked out. They've disbanded the teams. And in some cases, the teams that they've disbanded, the special ops teams, you know, those people, they're now extra mad about it, right? And they're filtering out through the system and they're not going to be hit, right? Like, this is a movie about an industry that is collapsing, middle-aged workers in that industry who, as I think it's Matt Damon says, I just don't love being a cop anymore. This is a complaint about they don't love being actors anymore. But what can you do? If you're a middle-aged cop who doesn't love being a cop anymore, you can go out on the scene and you can, maybe you can steal $20 million. $20 million very specifically is the amount that big movie stars get paid when they go to Netflix or other streamers. Mark Wahlberg is the biggest streaming star right now. He's a contemporary of theirs in a lot of ways, right? Another kind of 50-ish year old guy from Boston who does kind of B-grade at best action movies for streaming. And he is paid, his rate is now $20 to $25 million per movie. This really looks to me like they have decided to take that Netflix money, but also they've done so with a script and a story that is built around making, basically sort of making fun of that model that you hate, Sonny, because what else are they going to do? They like money. They like,
I like money.
It's not going to make they're not going to make Good Will Hunting anymore for $12 million and bring in $225 million at the global box office. That industry is gone. It doesn't exist. So you may as well go get your rip. And that is what they did here. Good for them. They got paid. I had 2 hours of moderately enjoyable, forgettable entertainment because of it.
Well, I mean, the irony here is that they could have made this movie for $12 million, even in today's money. Like, it is a movie that is 80% just people standing around talking. It's largely in one location. It's not entirely in one location. There are several sets, but like most of the movie takes place in one building. There are some action set pieces, but there aren't that many and they're not that extensive. I find everything about this money grab to be like vaguely vexing. Alyssa, what did you make of The Rip?
So I've been thinking a lot lately actually about the fact that this is the 30th anniversary of Good Will Hunting, came out this year. And look, I grew up in the Boston area. I am a charter member of the Church of Matt and Ben. I am politically, you know, affiliated with the Dunn Kings. Matt and Ben, reading the full list of Massachusetts town names is like, you know, it brings back all the warm fuzzies. And I am not totally reached firm conclusions about sort of what it is about that era of kind of working class coded Boston male stars that kind of took off and has lingered around. But I find it really interesting. And I regret to say that this movie is just not that enjoyable, even for someone who like cracks up at like the Dunn Kings ads and stuff, because like that is my youth, right? Like, Tom Brady and like Rob Gronkowski and like guys being dudes and like hanging out in New England and not really liking this fancy shit and wanting to hang out with their friends. Like that's just sort of a
I need to remind people that you're talking about a Dunkin' Donuts ad. Because it took me a second to like it was a thing that like everyone knows what the Dunn Kings are. Like, what? Oh, that's right. That
this
ad.
This is Ben Affleck's
the Super
like,
Bowl
repeated,
ad.
Yeah, Super Bowl ad for Dunkin' Donuts, Dunkin' Coffee. America runs on Dunkin'. This is not just a Boston phenomenon anymore. Neither am I in bed, goddammit. I think that
it's still especially a Boston phenomenon when I am up there. Oh my goodness. The Dunkin' Donuts will have like car lines a block,
it's like how people in DC have like their tate for every neighborhood. It's like, yeah. Which Dunkin' are you going to, right? It's like, I mean, I go back to my hometown fairly infrequently and can like just mentally, the last time I was back, the Dunkin' that is at the intersection near like the most convenient gas station has closed. And it's like, it's the only time I've ever seen a Dunkin' Donuts fail, right? It's like something is deeply wrong with Boston's economy that like a Dunkin'. Anyway, Sonny is starting to get just like really irritated with me.
But this is, I just want to be clear. This is the appropriate way to discuss this movie, because this is a movie that where you don't have to pay attention. You can just be thinking about Dunkin' Donuts the entire time.
And Matt and Ben.
Yeah, I imagine Homer Simpson with like Matt and Ben like eating donuts in his head as he's watching the movie. You know, that does sound about right.
This movie was better because Peter made me two very good cocktails during it. It was better because like he and his wife were sitting there and I could just sort of like blurt out random dumb theories at times. But like it really was one of the purest distillations of the like, this is a movie to do something else to. I mean, the perfect example of the Netflix, you need to say all the exposition out loud, is a scene where this stash house where they're counting the money catches on fire. And you hear people be like, there's fire. We're on fire. My grandmother's house is on fire. It's like five times in 2 minutes. It's amazing. But the reasons that it's bad, I think, sort of go beyond its, you know, existence of, you know, its existence as a Netflix exemplar and all the sort of Netflix ticks. I have a real pet peeve about movies that spend their last couple minutes being like, we're so much more clever than you are. We pulled one over on you. Because for that to be satisfying and not make me who, like, you know, and I talked about this on our bonus with Franklin Leonard, the way I watch movies is with an air of sort of fundamental absorption, right? But I don't, I am not someone who's like timing act breaks or anything else. I just sort of want to be carried away. But what I really don't like is finding out that I was wrong and have, because the movie is self-satisfied about itself, with a reveal that's not that charming or interesting. And in this case, the reveal of like the actual big bad and what was going on the whole time, it just feels satisfying in no way. And so it's like movies like that make me feel as if the director and writer just have a certain level of contempt for me. Right. And like when I look at a movie like Black Bag, right, like I actually do think that David Koepp and Steven Soderbergh are smarter than I am. Right. Like I am sort of happy to be led astray by them. And, you know, I will happily watch another Oceans movie again. Like, I trust Steven Soderbergh to trick me in the interest of showing me a good time, not because he's so enamored of his own cleverness. And this movie feels like a little enamored of its own cleverness. The reveal is not it. The reveal just made me feel sort of just like, OK, why did I watch this? Right. This is a movie that's much more interesting if the person who seems like is the bad guy is actually, for much of the movie, actually is the bad guy. But no, this movie thinks it's smarter and cuter than that, so I had to put up with something else. And I did not like that, even though Matt and Ben can get me to like a lot of things.
I think that's a good point, but the ending goes the way it does. In part, it felt like kind of a star image protection to me in a way that was a little odd, actually.
Right, I mean, I'm
Matt
sorry,
Damon
like
and Ben Affleck don't need to be the heroes. They don't at this point, right?
I mean,
they
like,
don't,
I kept
their
the good
star
guys.
Qualities don't read like.
I kept expecting it to be a riff on The Departed, right? Like where you know you use Matt the sort of essential decency and like non dirt baggery that Matt Damon has built up over 30 years in Hollywood to like do something interesting. And nope, they don't do that.
Yeah,
I disliked it.
I did. I did think it was, well, it was interesting that it was very specifically like, actually, the cops are the good guys, except for this one guy, except for the snitches, except for the snitch. We don't like them. But like the it was, I don't know.
If I want to make an argument for that, it is that there was, this is very loosely based on our true story. And Matt Damon's character is playing a character who is, again, very, very loosely based on a Miami cop who did, in fact, find one of these giant stash houses. All the twisty stuff is mostly made up. But who had the cop who his character is based on did, in fact, have a son who he lost to cancer. And like maybe they sort of looked at that and said, well, we don't want to make that guy the bad guy. Right. We don't want to do that to him. Right. Which I understand. But then. Just tell a different story. Just tell a different story, one that's more interesting and does more with our two leading men, gives them something to do other than just sort of in the end be like, well, it's a little magic trick. We pulled the rug out from under you. And right. And that tattoo he's wearing, are we the bad guys or are we the good guys? Sorry,
good
right?
Guys.
We are and always will be. And it's like really? That's,
I'm sorry.
That's what you want to pull out of this?
Also, there's no way that that's your last exchange with, like, your dying 10-year-old son, right? Like, that read to me like one of those, you know, ridiculous Obama-era, like, Facebook posts about, like, politically precocious children. I was just like, that's nonsense. Also, Sonny, you are broadly correct about the Ben Affleck and whatever that guy's name is, buddy comedy.
Scott Atkins.
Pointed out, Scott Atkins. But as Peter pointed out when we were watching it, how funny would it have been if they'd gotten John Bernthal in that role and we'd had a reprise of The Accountant, too? Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I don't know. I would be happy with a three-way Affleck, Adkins, Bernthal buddy comedy. You do, get all three of them in there. They all look like brothers. It's great.
We've solved all the world's problems. Great.
Netflix could make that movie for $100 million. They could have three action scenes. It'd be great. All right. What do we think? Thumbs up or thumbs down on The Rip? Peter.
I think I have to give this a thumbs down.
Alyssa.
Thumbs down, but like veering slightly to up if you get Peter to make cocktails for you during it.
Thumbs down. I mean, again, like... It's fine. Like if you need 2 hours of entertainment, if you need 2 hours of not paying attention to what you're watching on TV, it's perfectly fine. But like, again, this is a victim of expectations for me. I have higher standards for Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. I have higher standards, frankly, for Joe Carnahan. This is a sort of movie that like if Scott Adkins had been the lead, and it was directed by Jesse V. Johnson or somebody, I'd be like, oh yeah, this is fine. This is fine. This is entertaining enough. I probably would have given it a thumbs up. But like the level of talent here is higher. It should be better than this. It should be better than it is. And it is not. And that is disappointing. So thumbs down. All right. That is it for today's show. Many thanks to our subscribers on Substack at movieisle.substack.com. Check out our merch at our Dashery store. Tell your friends. Strong recommendation from a friend is basically the only way to grow podcast audiences. If we don't grow, we'll die. If you did not love today's episode, please complain to me on Twitter at Sonny Bunch. I'll convince you that this is, in fact, the best show in your podcast feed. See you guys on Thursday, hopefully.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.